Even though we're not officially a team until Survivor Series, well, we think that Team Kevin and Chris and Braun, well, I think we think that sounds pretty great. Yeah? Right? Right, Chris? How good does that sound?
Yes.
There you go.
Team Chris and Kevin and Braun sounds delightful.
Delightful, he said. Oh, he's still here.
Are you in?
No, just let him. You in, right?
I'm on Team Braun.
Is that you breathing? Because I can't hear myself think.
Why are you moving, Dan?
Yeah, got a new house, so...
Nice, well, that's good.
Yeah, it's good that we got one, but it sucks moving. Like, putting all your... Once you don't realize how much stuff you have until you have to move it all, and it's just like, goddamn, is there more stuff?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I live in, like, a small-ass place, and I, like, every day I think about it, because I'm, like, I'm thinking about getting out of here at some point in the near future, so, but I'm just like, oh, man, all this stuff is going to suck packing up. Like, I have so much shit crammed into such a small space right now. It's going to be such a pain in the ass, but, yeah. Well, that's you know, that's all.
Well, take that.
New
take
house that. Is good.
Yeah, take that. Add 4 children. Yeah, it gets crazy.
I'm sure.
We're at the point now where we're just throwing toys away that they haven't played with in a while. It's like, no, we're not transporting this crap to the new place, or no, I'm not even letting you do it. But all right.
Yeah.
Kiss a little longer, stay close a little longer, hold tight a little longer, longer with Big Red.
The Big Red Machine is here.
All red, everything.
Ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, welcome to another episode of the Red Zone, where we review Raw, have some general wrestling talk, and overall, yeah, this is just an avenue really for us just to sit around and talk shit. So, I mean, that's what it is. We appreciate you joining us for the ride. You have CEO Hayes here, as always. And tonight, I have a special guest, and that is Babyface Bello himself, the Andrew Bello, host of the Next Level Wrestling Podcast. Andrew, what's going on?
Not too much, man. I'm feeling good tonight, CEO. We had a good episode of Raw tonight, at least in my opinion. I don't know how the people feel out there, but I felt good about tonight.
Yeah, I mean, of course, with any 3-hour show, it's going to have its ups and downs. But overall, I think Raw was improved this week. I think it still has a while to go before it gets to the consistency SmackDown that's hit week after week since this split. But I'm disappointed with a few things. Overall, the show I'm very happy with, though, this week. And it's been a while since I've been able to say that.
Yeah, I think it was. It became apparent to me, like, right out the gate that they were booking to the arena. They forgot how to do that at certain points during the night. But, like, even something as small as Jericho getting his own entrance in the opening segment, like, they're not out in Scotland all that often. So they wanted to kind of, like, do their thing for the Glasgow crowd. And I think they did a good job of it tonight. I think they gave kind of a little bit of everything.
So let's start the show off with that, because I don't know if before the show you saw some of the things on Twitter I did, but how did you feel about the crowd tonight? Do you feel like they tried to hijack the show? Was it like Full Sail on crack tonight to you?
I think, you know, this is WWE's doing to a degree. Like, the European crowd is really into their product and into professional wrestling in general, and they do 90% of their shows here in the States. So when you go out to Glasgow every, you know, once or twice a year, they want to have their voices heard, you know, like give them more shit and they'll be less prone to making a big deal about it when you do give them something. But yeah, there was obviously the whole moment with Bayley where, you know, I love that everyone loves Bayley and I love that everyone loves chanting, and that's a cool ass chant. And I'd be doing it too if I was there, but you got to let the people you're cheering for do what they do. Like, you know, you're not the only ones in the world that you know, that love them, and you know, you got to at least let Bailey cut her promo. Like, let Bailey be Bailey so that we can all see how awesome she is instead of you just trying to tell us.
Yeah, so who do you think that the crowd got to the most tonight? I mean, the Bailey thing, of course. I think that they got, and not just because of what she said to him, but I legitimately think they were getting under Charlotte's skin a little bit. And she's shown overall in her career that the crowd can really kind of rile her up some and kind of get her off her game. Do you agree with that?
I think she's gotten much better with that. Yeah, there was definitely a moment or two early on in this run as she was starting to kick it into this next gear that she's at right now that you could clearly tell the crowd was getting to her a little bit. But I think tonight it was more her kind of rolling with it in character. Like, she was just, you know, disgusted. How dare they cheer Bailey, this peasant, this simpleton? You know, it should anger her in character and in real life, I guess, to a degree, even though, you know, in real life, they're trying to get the reaction. So, you know, she might be on the inside just loving this. Like, maybe she's finally getting it, and that's why she's not as prone to getting thrown off by the crowd anymore these days. But I don't know. I mean, you know, there was we'll get into the Cruiserweight match, too. But the crowd in that match, they did what they were supposed to do. And then WWE, like, did so ass backwardsly that it didn't really... It all canceled itself out where, you know, Dar obviously was going to be a huge babyface. They put him with the heel. And then, you know, Swan gets the win when, you know, for some reason Sin Cara is out there. I don't want to get too much into that now. but yeah, like, the Scottish crowd's doing what they want to do. And, you know, if they give them good shit to work with, like when Sasha came out and just sang along with them real quick, they quieted down. She got to do her promo. Like, some people just have control of it. And they, you know, if you let people just do their thing, and you have good people out there cutting promos, they're not going to get thrown off by it.
Yeah, very, very true. As far as I like when the crowds are like this. Like, I love to see hyped up crowds. It is a little, I guess, offsetting and off-putting for the talent in the ring who's trying to cut their promos and everything. But I love to see the passion and just the excitement levels, because a lot of times, you know, when Raw's turning around the United States, you know, you get a lot of casuals there. A lot of people are just showing up, and you don't really get that level of just being so into the product. So I love European crowds. Like, for better or worse, I just love them overall. And maybe that's just for me watching a lot of freaking British and just overseas indies and stuff, but I legitimately love overseas crowds usually. So, you know, take the good with the bad. It is what it is.
Yeah.
But to start the show off tonight, we got the announcement of the last member of Team Raw, and that is Seth Rollins. Did you expect it to be anyone else other than Seth?
No. Under no circumstances did I think it would be anyone other than their number one overall draft pick, Seth Rollins.
And so why do you think they wanted to make us wait a week for that? Like, they could have just announced it by now. Like, we all knew it was going to be Seth Rollins. There was no anticipation build up for that at all. At least maybe not. Maybe we just do too many podcasts. I don't know. But I fully expected it to be Seth Rollins here.
Yeah, I think it was pretty clear even at the end of Raw last week when him and Reigns had their little awkward moment. You know, it was pretty obvious that they were going to kind of end up teaming up, and, you know, obviously he's the best available guy by a million miles, so there was no way it was going to be anybody other than him, unless they were going to do him versus Triple H at Survivor Series, which at this point it's way too close for them to have pulled the trigger on. So yeah, there was no real surprise here.
Yeah, and then so what do you think of Steph saying, you know, their jobs depend on it? They're going to fight for in this match like their jobs depend on it, because it does. Do you think they're teasing maybe someone getting cut and going over to SmackDown? What do you think is going to ultimately happen with that line, if anything? Because I kind of think it was just a throwaway line, but I want to make sure that I bring it up because I'm sure some people are probably reading into that line a little bit more than at least what I think it is. But what are your opinions on it?
Yeah, it was a very interesting choice of words, because they had that Survivor Series match, what was it, a year or two ago? Was it a year ago? I don't even remember, the when Sting came out and helped Dolph Ziggler, but all those guys were going to get fired if they didn't win, you know, and that was the stipulation for that Survivor Series match. So I don't know that that's the route they were going. At this point, you'd figure they'd have told us because Survivor Series is Sunday. So I don't, you know, I don't think that that's like a thing, but it was a very interesting choice of words there from Steph. And I'm happy you brought her up because I think her and Hunter must have had like a little pillow talk conversation last night where she was like, "Hey, I'm going to go out there and bury the entire Raw roster tonight." And he was like, "Nah, you can't do it." And she's like, "Watch me." And she went out there and fucking buried all five of their top singles competitors in one segment. Mic drops, walks out, and then goes in the back and takes a shit on Sami Zayn. It was ridiculous. All six of their top singles competitors just got buried by one woman who is on just this insane power trip for no reason whatsoever. And I'm not one of those people that like hates Stephanie McMahon on a regular basis for shit like this, but come on, man. None of them are ever going to get any sort of comeupance on her. Ever. It's so just what, ridiculous.
It eventually has to happen. Do you think it's like... It's crazy how much she does this. Like, she did it with Mick. It completely went away with Foley. They're back to being buddy-buddy or whatever a couple of weeks later. And like you said, she ran down every top guy on Raw. And it's just like, come on. At some point, I know it'll never happen because it's WWE TV, but if this was Lucha Underground, she would have ate a super kick or something by now. Like something needs to happen. Like, maybe Kevin Owens finally snaps and power bombs her through a table. Like, I just want to see something happen because this crap is just, it's just amazing. She has it's the most protected thing in WWE right now. Stephanie McMahon's promo. It's just goddamn.
Yeah. I mean, and again, like, I'm not one of these people who does, like, on a habitual basis complains about this. Like, I think Stephanie McMahon is great at what she does if burying the talent is what she's supposed to be doing. But she, you know, is out there and she's great on the mic and she carries herself well and she's, you know, she's a good version. She's like the female version of the Mr. McMahon character all over again, trying to be a good guy but still being an asshole all at the same time. Like, it's just... she's good at what she does, and she's gotten her comeuppance in the past. Like, despite the fact that people want to ignore it, like, she got put into an arm lock by Ronda Rousey, she got speared by Roman Reigns at WrestleMania, she, you know, got slapped by Brie Bella and embarrassed in that whole segment. Like, she has had her moments. Vicky Guerrero threw her into the sludge, but it was. And even though Vicky ended up having to leave anyway, like, ultimately Steph won. But it's, you know, she's gotten, you know, people have gotten her back even in the smallest of ways. But yeah, like, none of these six guys are ever going to be able to do anything back to her. And even if they could, like, super kick her, like in Lucha Underground, she's the boss's daughter. Like, you can't even do that to her. It'd be like super kicking Cueto and hoping that he wouldn't just have his brother eat you. Yeah. But yeah, it's ridiculous. And, you know, I like her and I like her character, but it went a little too far tonight.
Yeah, it did for sure. But coming out of this, we get a fatal five-way match made between Kevin Owens, Chris Jericho, Roman Reigns, Braun Strowman, and Seth Rollins. And when that match was made, I was actually pretty excited. I was excited to see Braun get in the ring with people of this caliber just to see how much he's really improved, because you keep hearing things about Braun and, you know, he's had those squash matches now for like 3 months straight. So I was excited to see him in the ring with these guys. Were you as well?
Yeah, I was. And Braun Strowman is like, they've done a pretty good job of booking him. Like, I actually was, like you said, like, I was intrigued to see that he was going to be in there with these other guys and see how they worked, you know, around him or with him or, you know, however they were going to try and do it. Wasn't necessarily pleased with how they ended up doing it, but it was, you know, at the time intriguing to see, you know, that they were going to throw him in there with those guys.
Yeah, for sure. So coming out of this, we get a cruiserweight division match. But before we talk about the actual match, let's talk about the announcement of 205 Live, which I was happy that you were going to be on the Red Zone today specifically to get your thoughts on this. Are you excited about this show? Do you think it's going to do anything better than what we've gotten as far as the cruiserweights on Raw? Do you think they're going to be able to work their style more? What are your expectations of 205 Live?
I'm worried about oversaturation for the cruiserweights already. Like, and Michael Cole does say during this match that they'll also be on Raw in addition to having this show and some of them are popping up in NXT, like Cedric Alexander. I think maybe, just maybe, CEO, I saw Neville at some point during that video package that they were putting together.
Oh, God, yes.
About the thing. I think I saw him at the very, very tail end. There was, like, somebody up on the ropes doing, like, a pose that looked like him with his two fingers, like, together up in the air thing. I don't know if my mind was just playing tricks on me, but maybe, I mean, shit, if 205 Live is going to be, like, a show where Neville is the centerpiece, like, I'm down with that. Like, that would be awesome. Send him over there and have him just kill it for 6 months, and then maybe bring him back up and give him, like, a serious, you know, run at a heavyweight title. That would be really cool. But I'm in favor of them doing more cruiserweight stuff, and I'll be interesting to see what kind of guys they bring in. It looks like Tozawa and even Gallagher are going to be on this show, as well as Tajiri. So it'll be good. What do you think?
I'm excited for it. I hope that, A, if they're going to have their own show, I think they need more than the one title. So I'm hoping, and I don't know if I've heard this said otherwise. I don't want to act like I'm just cornering the market on this idea, but I want to see a trios title. Like, I want to see that on 205 Live. I think we need that. I think we need more than one title. That'll be a perfect way to kind of have whoever's not in the cruiserweight title run or competition or scene to kind of get more people highlighted that way and do it organically, other than just throwing a bunch of guys in a match. So what do you think about that idea? Have you seen that other places also?
I think I mentioned that when we were talking about it on one of the post shows with JB. I mean, if you're going to build a whole show around the cruiserweight division, it's going to have to be about more than just the one belt, because, like, it can only be defended ever so often. And if it's all going to be singles guys, that leaves most of the roster out of the title picture, which is like, all right, what are they doing then? You know, how many 6-man tag matches can we see? So, trios would be cool. Even just a regular tag title would be cool. And then maybe we do ultimately start seeing cruiserweights on SmackDown, and they get, like, the cruiserweight tag division, and Raw gets the cruiserweight, you know, main title division, or flip, you know, vice versa. So that maybe that's a route that they want to go at some point as well. What do you think about that?
Yeah, I like that. I like both ideas. They need to do something more. They need to also, more so than just titles, they need to get some actual good storytelling told with the cruiserweights. I feel like they've done a little bit of it with Kendrick and TJ Perkins. Not really anything else other than that. I just want to see some actual character work done, because they have guys here who, honestly, when you look at the cruiserweights, they have guys with pretty different characters, and also some just pretty big characters also. And Neville, like you said, I want to see Neville do good so bad, because I just love Neville. I don't know how anyone could not love Neville. Know. Like, I want more for him. And then also, like, people like Tajiri, just to get him back around. I think he'll be good for a lot of the younger, more inexperienced people to work with, whoever they decide to bring into the cruiserweight division. And then also Jack Gallagher. Like, once I heard that WWE signed him, I was so excited. We haven't got him at all on Raw. And you know what? If they had this plan to do this and they kind of held him back for this, then I'm all for it, because I think Gallagher is just going to be somebody who people just instantly fall in love with.
Yeah.
So what do you think as far as it coming on, though, right after SmackDown? Like, that's the only thing about this whole thing that really makes me scratch my head. Like, I don't like it airing right after SmackDown. A, because I do a SmackDown podcast, if no one else knows. And so now I have to think of, am I going to add it into that? Not even that. It's like, you're just making it another 3-hour night for me. 3.5-hour night, because Talking Smack's been so good. I genuinely want to watch that. So now I have to wait till after the 205 Live show airs before we can even get to that. So just having another night of 3 hours. What do you feel about that?
Yeah, it's an interesting choice. I guess that's the only way that they could really do it live, I imagine. So that you know, or the easiest way for them to do it live. So I mean, I'm all right with them doing it that way, I guess. I mean, I would prefer that they didn't call it 205 Live. They just taped it that night, you know, the hour after SmackDown, and then they went ahead and taped and played it the next night after NXT or something like that. Especially because those two crowds are way, you know, way more similar than the, you know, the cruiserweight crowd and the SmackDown crowd might be. So I think that would have been a better fit naturally. But I guess it doesn't really matter to me when they air it. I'm going to watch it when I want to watch it because it's the network. So.
Yeah, true. It's just I would have liked it more, honestly. And this is, I don't know how much more airing live costs. I'm sure the prices just skyrocket, but I would have rather see NXT live than 205 live. Just, that's just my opinion. Don't get me wrong, I love the cruiserweights. I have very high hopes for the show, but I would rather had seen NXT go live. I may just be crazy, but hey.
No, I'm on board with that, definitely.
All right, so we've stalled it long enough. The next match is Sin Cara and Rich Swann versus Brian Kendrick and Noam Dar. I love the ICW chance for Dar. I didn't expect that at all, but I didn't really think about it beforehand. But the match itself, I can't say I liked the match. I can't say that I hated it either. I don't know. I felt weird about this match. How'd you feel about it?
No, you know what? I'm deferring to you on this one. I'm going to let you go first because I got a lot to say about this match.
I mean, it felt weird to me. Like, I can't really think of any way to describe it other than that. I don't know. I don't know what they were aiming for with this match, but none of it hit home for me at all. And, you know, Kendrick blaming Dar for the loss or whatever and punching him afterwards is just like, you know, I mean, I kind of saw it coming when you put a face with a heel. Why? I don't know. What? Go ahead. Take it away. This is your segment. I want you to just completely run off on this one.
All right. So the things that were wrong with this match. First of all, Sin Cara. Why the fuck is Sin Cara in this match? Sin Cara had the nerve to lift a hand to Chris Jericho on a bus at some point during the tour. Like, how dare he? He shouldn't even be on television. Nonetheless, in a match, in a babyface role. Like, I mean, as dumb as creative has been, they've at least managed to figure out that Rich Swann is the baby face of the century. And, you know, to put Sin Cara with him and then put Dar, the hometown debuting, you know, young star from Scotland, like, in a match as a face, clearly. There's no way he wasn't going to be a face. Even if he was the most vicious heel in the history of indie wrestling, he was going to get a huge pop in his hometown, and they put him with the heel champion. And then I'm thinking to myself, all right, maybe that's because Dar, like Kendrick's going to get the win, and at least Dar will be on the winning team. All right, that's cool. Nope. Rich Swann fucking, you know, rolls up Kendrick and pins him in actually really cool, like, almost figure four style roll up, which was cool. But Dar loses and then gets punched by Kendrick. Like, all right, I'm all for drawing heat for Kendrick and stuff like that. But why didn't they just put Swann and Dar on the same team and Sin Cara, who, you know, sucks and no one cares about anyway, with Kendrick, and have the two of them win that match, and you can have Kendrick go over Dar and get the same amount of heat? That's what I got. I think I only dropped an F-bomb or two in there. I'm actually sort of disappointed.
Yeah, I was expecting a little more F-bomb too. But, I mean, you know, for all intents and purposes, the promo Kendrick cut afterwards, it drew heat. It was cool. But I have to echo your sentiments there. Sin Cara, I just think that there are at least five other people backstage who would have made more sense in this match than Sin Cara.
Yeah, guys who didn't punch Chris Jericho in the face over the weekend. That's, you know what I'm saying? Like, if you're going to reward that kind of behavior, that, like, why do the other nine guys even bother giving a shit? Because not only is he not as good as they are, but he acts like an asshole backstage and beats up everybody for some reason. Like, how many times could he be the victim in all of this? Like, eventually it's just you, man. Like, I'm sorry.
Yeah. I mean, you got a point when you're the common denominator in all the in backstage fights. I mean, at some point you have to realize that you're the problem. But I don't know, man. I really don't know what to say. Obviously, you know, maybe this is the year where when you do something crazy backstage, you get a push. Because look at what happened with Bo Dallas. He got arrested, and then all of a sudden he was getting squash matches the next month after the fact. So I don't know what's going on backstage. Maybe they're afraid Sin Cara is just going to beat them up, and they're like, well, let's give him something so he won't punch us. I don't know, man. I don't know.
I could see Vince really appreciating him punching people backstage, especially Jericho. Like, Vince has got, like, this weird thing for Jericho. I've read a couple of his books. They have, like, this very odd relationship where Vince likes Jericho because he's made him tons of money and he doesn't really back down. Like, he's not like afraid of Vince, so he kind of respects him on that front, but he also thinks he's sort of like effeminate and weird. So it's like this really odd back and forth relationship. So I can almost see him appreciating Sin Cara punching Jericho in the face. And maybe that's why he got into this match tonight. I don't know.
You know what? Vince is a weird guy. Like, the stuff that Vince appreciates is just like, wow. I would really love to, honestly, just one day off camera, whatever, it's never going to happen, but just to sit down and talk with Vince McMahon, just to get a glimpse inside what he really thinks, because the guy just seems like he's just crazy, man. Vince is just an interesting cat. But speaking of interesting, and I usually don't mention stuff like this on the podcast, but we got the official theme song of Survivor Series, and that is False Alarm by The Weeknd. I fucking hate this song. I hate it, Andrew. I hate this song. And when it came on, and they're like, the official theme, that means all next week leading up to the pay-per-view, we're just going to keep hearing this goddamn song. I hate this song. Please tell me I'm not alone.
Actually, I think I fast-forwarded through this. I was on a little bit of a tape delay, so I don't know. I don't think I know the song. I often don't pay much attention to the theme songs unless it's like an artist I actually know. I do know The Weeknd, but not well enough to care.
Well, whatever. It's a terrible song in my opinion. Yeah. I'm sure somebody else is gonna. Yeah, whatever. But the video package we get for Goldberg Lesnar, by God, was this a good video package? Yeah, considering they only had one match and Goldberg's been gone for fucking 12 years, I think they did a really good job with this video package. What about you?
Yeah, I'm so checked out on this. Hope it doesn't waste too much of our time at Survivor Series at this point. Unless they really pull the rabbit out of the hat and they do something to tease the Ultimate Shane versus Brock match, you know, at the end there, that would be kind of interesting. They'll both be in the arena together. But I don't know. I don't care enough about this. I was sort of upset that the Lesnar promo he cut during the package wasn't really, it was sort of tame for Brock. I assume, especially with those sit downs, that he'll at least swear at some point because he knows that they could censor it out anyway. But he usually drops like a really good line, like, you know, what was it, vomit, urine, you know, shit, repeat, or whatever. He had some crazy, he was going to kill John Cena. But I don't know. It was what it was. What did you think here?
I liked it. I thoroughly enjoyed it. I can't say that I'm as excited for the match because, I mean, we talked, I believe it was me, you, and JB when we kind of talked about that already. I'm not excited for this match at all. Not even a little bit. I'm more excited. Nope. I hope that Shane comes out and causes Lesnar to lose because they kind of just completely dropped that storyline. This is probably, I'm anticipating this match to be where I get up and get my snacks together. I reload on all my food and my beer and whatever else I'm drinking that night. Because that is really, I have no interest in this match. And I know that's not the, you know, common thoughts on this. I know this, everyone, Corey Graves called it a mega match. And I'm just like, and I keep saying this, has there ever been a match that someone's had, that two people have had, that have been as bad as the Lesnar and Goldberg match, that then people just talk about having a rematch for the last 12 years periodically? Like, why? After what did anybody see in that match? They're like, you know what? Yeah, I want some more of this. Who? Because please tell me what you guys were smoking when you watched that match, because maybe it helped me get through this match of Survivor Series. Because I just, after that match at Mania, there's nothing they can do to get me excited for this. And I already can predict what they're going to have next week when they're both there. They're going to have the pull away and the break apart and the security to kind of hype up the big thing. And I'm just going to be looking at it like, you know what? Fuck Goldberg. Fuck Brock Lesnar. Like, just why? Why? Goldberg in 2016 is having a marquee match at Survivor Series. Who would have thought it?
Yeah, I don't know. They really got to cut the shit with this fantasy warfare stuff, too. It was ridiculous when they were describing the Goldberg versus Brock match like that, and now they're using it for all of the matches across the board with this fantasy warfare stuff. Like, Brock and Goldberg had a match already. This isn't fantasy. This isn't the Incredible Hulk versus Godzilla. Like, this actually happened. it's not a fantasy. And my fear, CEO, and I meant to talk about this the first time that we were kind of discussing this match, is that my fear is that the crowd is really excited to shit all over this match. Like, I think they all want to have their moment where they were like, we were there, WrestleMania 20, when we booed two of the biggest superstars in wrestling out of the building. And I think they want to do it again. Like, I think that's why people are interested in this match, is that they kind of want to see the train wreck factor all over again. And even if they put on a good match, I think that everyone's still going to go ahead and do what they want to do in that crowd. And, you know, I've heard some buzz on podcasts and things of the like, is that, you know, Goldberg isn't necessarily popular up in Canada, you know, having ended Bret Hart's career with that mule kick that caused him to have his concussion and basically ended his career. So I don't know that people are that smart, to be honest. And nothing against the good folks up in Canada, but, you know, if that becomes a thing too, it could get ugly up there. I don't know. If Brock doesn't win that match, I'm going to be really upset, because none of that makes sense at all otherwise.
Exactly. The only thing that could save this match for me, and I hate that they ruined it and gave this ending to the Randy Orton match, but if Brock just completely dominates Brock Lesnar and just KOs him and just he's a bloody mess afterwards, I would enjoy it. Like, if they just completely redid what they did at, what was that, SummerSlam with Orton, that's the only way I can enjoy this match. I would enjoy seeing Goldberg just decimated.
Yeah, I like that idea. I mean, I in my mind, like, the best possible way the match could go is that Goldberg comes out like a house on fire, and within, like, 60 seconds, he's hit all of his moves. And he hits a jackhammer, and Brock just no-sells the shit out of it, suplexes him to death, and that's the end of the match. Like, that's the best possible scenario for me. I don't know that that's going to happen, but I don't know. I mean, that might save it. Like, if we get a John Cena-esque beatdown from Brock, like, that could save it for me. But, you know, this is all about Goldberg coming back, getting his last paycheck, and doing this for his kid. So I don't think it's going to be anywhere near as violent of a beating as it should be, you know, for Goldberg. I think they'll make him look strong for some weird reason, and maybe even, you know, we get a distraction from Shane, and it almost cost Brock the match, but he should not be losing this match under any circumstances. It's just that win is so precious right now, and they got to hold on to it, and they need to do something with it sooner rather than later. Like, they can't just let him get to the end of the contract again and then decide, like, the night before WrestleMania that they have to make a decision on his contract. Otherwise, he might just, you know, he might decide just not play ball, and you've lost everything for the last 3 years. So they need to do something with that win, and they need to get Brock away from these, you know, these Undertaker Goldberg matches and have him start mixing it up with you know, some of the top talent, Kevin Owens, you know, Rollins and Reigns again, and maybe give Dean Ambrose another legit shot. And I'd give anything to see AJ Styles and Brock Lesnar mix it up. So that'd be really cool. You know, they need to get Brock away from Goldberg. So hopefully he wins clean and they move on. I've been rambling for too long.
Yeah, I mean, no, I would love to see AJ Styles versus Brock Lesnar. It would be interesting to see how they would book that match. But, you know, they did. AJ's been in all different types of matches over his career, so he can do anything. I just, you know, you saying that, I would really honestly love to see a match like that, but I don't know. I don't know if we'll ever get it, and that's kind of saddening there. But, you know, moving on from what's probably going to be shit to Stephanie McMahon. You mentioned this backstage already, how her and Sammy, she gets on the phone. She's saying how she can't be on SmackDown, but she invites Daniel Bryan and Shane McMahon to appear on Raw next week. So it's going to be, they're teasing that they're going to make their announcement on SmackDown. They're going to be on Raw next week, people. I hate to just spoil it for you, but they're going to be there. And so she reveals that Sami Zayn have accepted Dolph Ziggler's challenge, but she'd rather give it to Rusev. So she made a match. Sami Zayn versus Rusev. The winner gets to face Dolph Ziggler for the IC title. And something that me and JB predicted, we'll talk about that a little bit later on in the show. Next, we get Enzo Amore dancing out. He just receives a huge pop from the crowd. And they did a little mic work here. This brings out Carl Anderson and Luke Gallows, which then brought out Goldust and R-Truth, which then brought off Cesaro and Sheamus. And I will say this. This was one of the more entertaining times I've ever seen Cesaro on the mic. I don't know if it was just me. I love Cesaro in the ring. I usually kind of cringe when he gets on the mic, but I thoroughly enjoyed him on the mic here. Do you agree with that?
Yeah, I liked it. I liked him rolling with the New Day, obviously doing the shame bit on Sheamus, and he was working that to his advantage even before the New Day got out, which was good. Cesaro and Sheamus have a cool little chemistry. I'm sort of starting to like them more and more every time I see them on the screen. So, anything to bring out more character in Cesaro is a good thing in my book, because that's hopefully another step towards him potentially being a heavyweight champion at some point in the near future.
Yeah, and so yeah, it's done wonders for Cesaro. I love these two guys together, but that brings up another interesting thing that I want to bring up is that Sheamus has showed just over his career that Vince or whoever else kind of trusts him to get people over. So I don't know if this was ultimately their goal here, but do you think that Sheamus is one of the more trusted people backstage? Like, just looking at his career, it seems like anytime they need a heel to have a quick title run, it's Sheamus. Anytime they need him to work, I mean, originally they had him pegged to work with Apollo to kind of help get Apollo Crews over. That was cut short with the brand split. So it seems like, at least in my opinion, that they really trust Sheamus. Do you agree with that?
Yeah, it's been said that Vince McMahon likes himself a good Irishman. So they're, you know, having Sheamus in his back pocket, I'm sure, is something that he likes having around. But yeah, he's pretty good friends with and trained with Triple H for a while. So he definitely has that cred backstage with the higher ups. And I think Sheamus is one of the most underappreciated talents they have. He's an exceptional heel. He's such a good heel. He works most of what, the smart marks on the internet that think that they know about the business, to the point to where, oh, I hate Sheamus. No, you're getting worked by Sheamus. Sheamus is awesome at what he does. He looks stupid. He knows he looks stupid. He's just a mean dude. It's all part of his character. It's, he's just very good at it. And, I think Sheamus is, very underappreciated. Like you said, like when they needed somebody to try and get Roman Reigns some cheers and somebody that he could take the title from that people weren't going to boo, there you go. We'll throw Sheamus out there, and it worked about as well as it was going to work with anybody at that point with Roman. So I think Sheamus is great. I think Cesaro is obviously feeding off him a little bit. Maybe this was the plan the whole time.
Yeah, and Sheamus comes on the mic here, and he mentions how, they have no chance against SmackDown Live as long as and hopefully I quote this right, but I wrote it down this way, and that is the unicorn wearing captains of their team. And, Cass interrupted him and said the last thing he needs to worry about is being the captain of anything. Enzo then said that Sheamus needs to be scared of the sun, kids stealing his lucky charms, mirrors, and dying alone.
How you doing?
Oh God, Enzo's just gold on the mic. Sheamus then told Anderson and Gallows that Enzo and Cass have their number. Gallows called Sheamus a nerd, and they said they'll smash him and his nerd into the Eurotrash Siamese twins. Cesaro said that they were so creative and suggested he follows it up by calling him Swiss Miss or Bald, and then said or even worse, the third member of the club. Finally, the New Day came out, dressed as, drumroll please, we're not getting a drumroll, unfortunately I don't have that sound effect, but as Braveheart. As Braveheart. This whole goddamn segment was just thoroughly entertaining. This was probably my favorite part of Raw, not in the ring. And, all this culminated in a match being made between New Day and Carl Anderson and Doc Gallows. But before we get into the match, just the segment, it was so much here. Even though I ran down a lot of it, I left out a big part, just a lot of it, too, also. I mean, I can't run down everything. But, how'd you feel about this?
Yeah, I thought it was great. And like you said, we got a little bit from Cesaro here. I thought he was, he was about as good as he's ever been, kind of doing an open live promo in the middle of the ring. kind of working off of everybody else. I didn't like that he teased him being the third member of the club, because that would be awesome. Like, that would be really great to see Cesaro with Anderson and Gallows. Like, that would be an awesome tandem. And if there's anybody that's like a quote-unquote WWE guy at this point that would have like unanimous acceptance from every member who's ever been a member of the Bullet Club, it would be Claudio Castagnoli. Like, you know, it would be Cesaro. That would be really cool. But yeah, the whole segment was great. The New Day, every time I think like the New Day is just about to jump the shark, they pull it back at, you know, the littlest bit, and they did great tonight. The whole thing with Big E cutting the Braveheart promo, and but you know, with the exception of Golden Truth just kind of being there, everybody did a really good job in this segment. I thought it was great.
Yeah, it was. I love the segment and the match here. I'm not gonna break down the match, because honestly, in my opinion, the match was kind of boring. It felt like filler here, but. Doc and Carl actually go over here, which these guys need wins, man. They've just handled the club so poorly since they've been there. How do you feel about the club going over? What would you do? And so, this is a 2-part question. How did you feel about the match? Second part is, what would you do to make the club feel like a legitimate threat? Like, what needs to be done there, in your opinion, to get them back where they need to be?
They have to win the titles at this point. Like, there's no way in this tag team division, unless you're Enzo and Cass, like, you're not going to get over the New Day unless you take the titles from them. Like, Enzo and Cass can just do their thing because they're awesome and they're close to, you know, being as consistently entertaining as the New Day is. But the New Day's been doing it for 2 years now at this point. But yeah, I mean, they need to win the titles from them. They need to preferably win them in a straight up match between the two, clean as a whistle in the middle of the ring. That would be ideal, but yeah, I don't know that that's something that they'll do. I fear that they might be the team that gets fed to the New Day one more time before they end up breaking the record, because they do have like a month or two to kill here. So Survivor Series, obviously they're not going to be defending the titles, but the pay-per-view after that, I guess, is about 4 weeks. So that adds, you know, another basically month to their reign, but they're still going to need to beat somebody one more time before they ultimately lose it. And they'll probably lose it in some sort of multi-man crazy match so that they still don't actually lose the match itself, but they'll lose the titles. I don't know. I don't know that Gallows and Anderson are going to be going anywhere anytime soon. I think they're just kind of being built up to continue to put over the New Day.
So, question here. Would you like to see them traded to SmackDown to reteam with AJ Styles, or do you think they need to be established completely on their own right now?
At this moment in time, because things being the way they are, yeah, let's put him back with AJ. I think the idea was ultimately that they were going to be put with Finn, which is why they stayed on Raw. I don't think that there was any, as we've seen through the booking, any real intention of pushing them as anything credible. So, you know, maybe the whole idea was to be with Finn, and now they just don't really have anything to do for the time being. But yeah, if Balor's not coming back for another 4 months or whatever it is, throw them on SmackDown. That tag division's awesome. They would only make it better. And give AJ some henchmen.
So, and just another thing to piggyback off that. So we're going to get, of course, the Raw and SmackDown rosters on Survivor Series. Do you think we're more likely to see a brief reunion with the Shield or the Club at Survivor Series?
I think we'll probably get like a backstage thing with the Club. Like, they'll all kind of bump into one another, hit a couple two squeetskis, and move on from there. But yeah, we're definitely going to get the spot with the Shield and the ring all at the same time at some point. As you know, because you edited it, but I talked about this on Next Level last week. They got to stop going to the Shield shit. Like, and it's watered down already to the point to where like they're not going to be able to get like a big moment out of it anymore if they do finally throw them all back together. We've already had like 4 teases in basically a year and a half that since they've broken up, that, you know, that it's just, it's silly. Like, just leave the Shield thing alone for a while. Let them all be their own thing. Change Roman Reigns' look and his theme music. Like, let's forget about the Shield for a while and then we can get back to putting them back together ultimately. But we'll definitely see that spot in that match. What do you think?
Yeah. I think we're going to get it. And just because they teased it tonight, I think we're going to get a Shield triple power bomb on Braun Strowman. Like, it has to happen. Or KO. Somebody has to eat it. It's going to happen, people. Just be prepared for it. I don't know exactly who's going to get it. Maybe even AJ. I don't know. But somebody's getting that triple power bomb. I don't know how they're going to work it, considering Braun Strowman's technically on the team with Roman and Seth. I could just see, like, Braun just getting pissed off and hitting Roman with a punch or something, and they just say, fuck it. Let's just take this guy out. So I see it going down some way like that. But like you said, and like you said in your podcast, when I was listening to it, when I was editing it, I'm like, he hit the nail on the head. You know, Mimi, she's ready for it. You know, she loves Roman. She says she's ready for the Shield to be come back together, and she thinks it's time. I really think it's too early. Like, I just think that, you know, give it another year or so and make it unexpected. It's just kind of... It's televised too much now. Like, we see it coming. Like, anybody who's watches wrestling at a higher level and kind of actually, you know some of the things that go on and just things like booking and typical booking things WWE does, you can see it coming a mile away.
Yeah, it really is just predictable. I mean, we've known for 3 weeks now that they were going to have Rollins and Reigns sort of have a moment at least some point in the near future. They're both feuding with the same two dudes, or at least up in that same picture together. So it's been telegraphed, and they just tried to pretend like they were going to be cute about it and like didn't do it for a couple weeks. And then, you know, last week they had their weird little like romantic comedy moment where they were staring at each other from across the ring. And it was weird.
It was. But so after the tag team match, we get backstage segment with Golden Truth, where R-Truth is telling Goldust he traded away their spot in the Raw tag team match for timeshares in Puerto Rico with an all-you-can-eat buffet. Goldust then points out that it's not actually an all-you-can-eat buffet, but it's actually an all-you-can-eat off Jimmy Buffett. Come on, man. I could not believe they said that on television.
Yeah, that's too much.
Oh man, it's just like, thankfully my daughter was not watching with me tonight, which is what rarely happens, because it's just like, I don't want to have to explain that to my daughter. What do they mean eating off Jimmy Buff? Like, no baby, it didn't happen. Luckily she wasn't around.
Yeah, really.
So of course then we get a match, and that is between Goldust and R-Truth versus the Shining Stars. And I hate to say that the Shining Stars won this match. Why? Why? And the winner got the spot on Team Raw. So that means we're going to see the Shining Stars on a pay-per-view, no less. They have to be there to eat the pin. Well, I guess it's a Survivor Series match, so technically everybody has to eat a pin for the other team to win. But, like, just why? Why? Please sell me on why the Shining Stars should be on a pay-per-view match.
I got nothing, man. what I will say, though, is that the Shining Stars couldn't have been, like, you know, less significant than Golden Truth during that whole segment with the five tag teams. Like, why, if they were going to do this, they couldn't have done it earlier in the night, so at least the Shining Stars could have been out there, maybe tried to get themselves a little over by being in the ring with guys like Cesaro and Sheamus and Enzo and Cass and the New Day. Like, that would have been way more helpful than them conning R-Truth into trading their spot for a timeshare. Although I do love that shit. I think that's kind of funny. I'm happy they finally started adding a little character to them, other than they're Puerto Rican and they're from Puerto Rico and they love Puerto Rico. And, you know, that's great and all, don't get me wrong, but is that a gimmick? Like, I don't really get what they were doing with that. But now the timeshare thing is cool. They're kind of shiesty and, you know, trying to sell fake watches and stuff like that. Like, I don't know. I'm not hating the Shining Stars quite so much these days.
I hate them. Like, I feel like with the Shining Stars, I feel like, I don't know if you've listened to Let Me Talk to You too much, even though we haven't recorded in a while. That is going to be coming back this week, though. So people who've been disappointed by Let Me Talk to You being gone, me and Josh are back. He's got his laptop up and running, so we are back. But I feel like the Shining Stars, how I do about Malabali, Shara, and TNA. Anytime I see them on my TV, I'm just like, no. I have the vein starts popping in my neck. the I start getting my $5 and $10 bills ready to put in the swear jar we have in the house, because it's coming. I just, God, I hate these guys so much, and it's really not due to them. It's due to just how they want to depict their characters. Like, let's just look at how they've been since they've been in WWE. We have the Shining Stars gimmick, which, in my opinion, sucks complete ass. Then you have them being Mexican matadors, and they're not fucking Mexican. So
the Puerto Rican bullfighters. Titus used to call that out all the time.
And then you gave them a little bull. Like, come on, man.
The little bull was the best of the three of them.
He was, but he could have been entertaining on his own. Like, it sucks. They need to bring Carlito back immediately if they can convince him to come back. And the first thing he does when he walks in is just slaps the shit out of both of them and like, what the fuck have you guys been doing? Let's get serious here.
Right? That'd be great. That would be great.
Exactly. Like that would just be awesome. Oh god, but
just spitting apples in people's face.
Oh man, get him to spit an apple in Stephanie's face and walk off like that. Like Stephanie's just going off on somebody, and then all we see is just apple come in her face, and we don't even see Carlito for like another week after that, just hyping his return. Just that.
Oh,
that
no, that's it. If he does that to Steph, that's it. That's the end of Carlito. We'll get one night only. Carlito debuts. Carlito's been released.
Oh man. Next we get Michael Cole standing in the middle of the ring, and the boos he got. I felt sorry for the guy, and I hate Michael Cole. Did you feel sorry for him at all here?
Nah, fuck Michael Cole. I didn't feel bad for him at all. You know why he gets booed? Because he sucks. He's no Josh Matthews, don't get me wrong, but he sucks.
Oh god, don't even get me started on Josh Matthews, man.
Josh
that guy.
Matthews, oh god, that's garbage water.
And it's funny, me and you are stuck doing a podcast while Josh Matthews has a job calling matches as his profession. Bello,
yeah.
You have a better voice, and you're better at talking about wrestling because you actually know wrestling than Josh Matthews. We need to get you a job on TNA. Like, we just need to do it. You and Josh Perry would be one hell of a commentary team. Let's make that happen.
I mean, we couldn't be any worse than... Actually, I don't hate Pope so much. I think he at least brings some energy to it. But yeah, Josh Matthews is... It's horrible. And then even worse than the fact that I'm sorry for anybody, we're going on a TNA commentary tangent now in the middle of our Raw review. But Josh Matthews not only is calling TNA, but he also is apparently going to be calling MMA fights some point for some promotion somewhere. Kid Cash, former ECW and TNA star, is doing an MMA fight, and Josh Matthews has been tapped to call it. So not only does he suck at wrestling, but some idiot out there thinks that he should be calling MMA too. It's just, it's ridiculous, man. Like, I can't even.
I don't know who would hear Josh Matthews and say, hey, we want you to come call our show. Like, whoever made that decision needs to be kicked in the nuts several times. Because I don't know what the hell they're thinking. But nonetheless, back to Raw. Michael Cole introduces the women's team Raw. He congratulated Charlotte on a great week, her winning the Hell in a Cell and also becoming the captain of Team Raw. She says she was a born leader, which then Nia Jax comes out and says she's her own leader and won't take the lead from Charlotte. Alicia Fox then says, if Angelina Jolie and Brad Pitt can be civil as divorced parents, then they can do it. The name of the game is survival, and Team Raw is the survivor. That line, how did you feel about that line?
I don't know. Like, part of me really wants to root for Alicia Fox, and then, you know, she starts cutting promos, and then I realize why she's not really anything.
Exactly. Michael Cole then introduced Bayley and said that she has a connection with the WWE universe unlike anyone has ever seen, which I would have to argue that. But nonetheless, that's the line he decided to use. Graves here, though, to speak of just from your show, and I love how you do the Graves call of the night, but Graves asked Byron how jealous of Cole he was right then. Why do you think this is like something that they just decide on their own, or is this something that the writers are doing to say, hey, let's see how we can give it to Byron every week? Do you think that that's, I don't know, it just seems like real jovial. And also, like, when you hear things like, I think it was last year when they were overseas and we had the feed, because I watched the feed when it was early, and you can hear things that get cut out the show. Like, you, when you just hear how JBL and Michael Cole legitimately give Byron Saxton shit throughout the whole show, I kind of feel sorry for the guy, but he sucks at his job, so I don't really. What about you?
Yeah, I sort of think that's his only real role out there these days, is to have, like, they can't have Graves shitting on Michael Cole, because they need to at least present the, you know, the idea that he's like a credible journalist type. So yeah, Corey needs somebody to crap on, and Tom Phillips isn't there, so sorry, Byron, like, you drew the short straw, homie. That's just how it works.
Yeah, and you know he sucks, but nonetheless, he does. He's
hard. The ducky pajamas, you know damn well he owns those. Those are not like a thing that he bought for Halloween last week. Those were pajamas that I guarantee Byron Saxton actually owned prior to Halloween season 2016. Guaranteed.
Like, you can see Byron Saxton sleeping in the hotel room in those pajamas with a mouth guard, and just like, I don't even know, like the blanket he's had since he was like five or something like that. Like, he's just a corny guy, man. Like, anyway, Charlotte announces that the final team member has made her a better person and a better champion, and she is Dana Brooke.
Oh, man.
Luckily, though, Michael Cole then said that Brooke is not the fifth member of the Survivor Series team, and said it's actually Sasha Banks. Thank God, because if Dana Brooke would have been in that match, I don't think I would have been able to, like, I wouldn't have been able to record tonight. I would have been I still would have been cursing from that segment right now. Just every curse word in every language possible, I would have ran through, because goddamn does she suck. And after that match at the pay-per-view at Hell in a Cell, I really think, honestly, she's going to get cut soon. I don't even think she's going to get sent back to the Performance Center. She has almost no value at all on the main roster or anything else. It just, I don't know. I mean, yes, they called her up too early, but with as bad as she is, I'm almost losing. She shows flashes every once in a while, but she's just overall, she has no one skill you could point out and says, hey, this is a plus for her.
I like Dana. Like, I don't like her ring work, obviously, because no one could. Like, it's not, you can't even make the argument that she's good in the ring, but I like her character and I like her look to a degree, and I was actually sort of disappointed that she isn't in this match, and here's why. At this point, with the Raw team being what we know it is now, with Sasha and Charlotte and Nia and Bayley, there's no way Raw doesn't win that match. Like, all the combustion amongst that team in the world isn't going to outweigh the fact that they're insanely more talented overall than the Raw, than the SmackDown team is. I mean, maybe not necessarily as deep, if you want to. You know, Alicia Fox is probably going to be, you know, the fifth person on either team. But like, Nia is going to go through at least two of the women on SmackDown. Charlotte's going to probably go through two of the women on SmackDown. And then I guess they'll throw Bayley or Sasha a win. And that's, you know, that's that. So at least with Dana in there, I could see, you know, her eating a pin, Foxy eating a pin. And then now at least we have some semblance of competition. Maybe if we can get like a 5-on-3 scenario going for SmackDown. But yeah, obviously I'm not going to complain about Sasha being around, but it would have been cool if, like, you know, if she could have just kept selling the Hell in a Cell injury, considering she's probably, you know, I don't know, even if I see her probably getting a pin, eating a pin at some point during the Survivor Series match, because you'll probably want to keep Charlotte strong, Bayley as who's going to probably be the number one contender, and Nia. I could see it going like a 3 Survivor, you know, kind of way for the Raw team. So I don't know. I would have been better to me if you kept Sasha off TV maybe for another couple weeks to sell those injuries, draw some sympathy, and make the fans miss her a little bit before she gets her rematch again. What do you think about you know, about this match overall, I guess?
Yeah, I mean, like you said, I thought we were going to be a while before we saw Sasha back on TV. I thought they were going to kind of give Bayley the top face run so to say, on Raw for a while. So I was honestly surprised to see her. I just, the moment that they said Dana Brooke was going to be the fifth person, I pretty much knew we were probably going to see her, if not this week, then next. But, you know, I will say this. I enjoy Charlotte as the champion. I enjoy Charlotte in general just so much. I think that, you know, you said it at the top of the show, she's gotten so much better on the mic, so much more comfortable just since she's been on the main roster. And, you know, I enjoy Charlotte. I don't want to see the title keep being hot potatoed between her and Sasha or really anyone else. I want to see Charlotte have this title through WrestleMania and probably drop it then. What do you think about that? Do you think she needs to have a lengthy run at this point, or do you think that title is going to either Bayley or Sasha at the next Raw exclusive pay-per-view?
Yeah, I would like to see her hold it for a little while. I think maybe the best case scenario is we get her and Bayley at WrestleMania, just because I know everyone wants to see Sasha and Bayley at WrestleMania, but we've seen that before. We haven't really seen, you know, Charlotte and Bayley have a lengthy promo or a lengthy feud together. And we haven't really seen them have, you know, a whole lot of interaction on Raw thus far up until recently. So I think that's maybe ultimately where we're going. And then Bayley gets the big win after kind of getting, you know, stepped on by Charlotte for several months. And then we can also have a secondary feud between Sasha and Nia, who are two women that haven't crossed paths yet that are a natural fit as well for a feud. Maybe that's the route that they go. But I was, you know, listening to several other podcasts over the course of the week, you know, in addition to the ones here on the Wrestling World Podcast Network. But there was talk of, and I think this is right on point, is that you can make the argument that Charlotte is in the conversation for Superstar of the Year, you know, with obviously AJ Styles and you know, Nakamura, and then you can, you know, obviously Reigns and Rollins having the years that they've had overall, you know, in wrestling, not even just in WWE, but, you know, she's having one hell of a year. It would really be an interesting argument. I hope she at least gets consideration. You know, if they, I don't know how they're going to do the Slammies this year, if they want to do Superstar of the Year includes all the women too, in which case, you know, you could certainly make the argument Charlotte is in contention. What do you think about that?
Yeah, I agree with that completely. I honestly would love to see her win Superstar of the Year, not have a separate women's one. I want to see her win Superstar of the Year. She's had a great year, an amazing year, and she definitely deserves it. Her or AJ, which I think everyone at this point, I think I've been exposed as an AJ Styles fan. I don't think that's a secret anywhere, but you know, I'd like to see AJ win it too, but I just like to think for what the change in women's wrestling and the change from the Divas to the women's match. And, you know, Charlotte has stepped up and had amazing just work. Every pay-per-view, she's done something amazing. I'd like to see her win it as it stands right now. I would absolutely love that. That brings me to another question, though. And this is something, in preparing for this, knowing it was going to be me and you, I wanted to get your thoughts because I know for a fact you watch a lot of wrestling like I do, just overall almost everything, especially everything WWE has. But who do you think, outside of Asuka, because I think she's kind of the easy pick, between NXT, SmackDown, and Raw, all the talent, who is the best women's talent across all three brands right now?
Oh, Charlotte.
I think Charlotte's the best in the ring?
Charlotte specifically in the ring?
We can do it overall. We can do one overall and then one just in the ring, so that you got two picks there. So overall, yeah, you're picking Charlotte. I would have to agree with that, but just in the ring, if we're talking about just in the ring
right now in the ring. Wow. I mean, there's a lot of good work going on right now with the women. I would say some of the best in-ring work is going on SmackDown right now. And as far, I mean, for my money, I'd say right now I might be able to make the argument Alexa Bliss is the best in the ring of all the women on all the shows.
Thank God. Yeah, I swear.
Okay, my dude, there we go.
Man, because I didn't want to sound absolutely crazy if I said that.
Oh,
but
wow.
I've been more impressed with her in this run than I have with anybody. And considering, I love Charlotte. I love Sasha Banks. I love Becky Lynch. Like, I love all those girls. Bayley, she's great in the ring, but you know, I'm not as big on Bayley as some people are. But Alexa Bliss is really just this whole, like, it's she was solid in NXT. She's been solid there too. She's had some great matches there, but she's really stepped it up being on the main roster. Like, I thoroughly enjoy everything with her character. I like the fact that she's added, just imitating different characters periodically. Like, and then her in the ring work is just, considering how little she is too. Like, I know all the women are comparatively little, but she's just amazing to me. I thoroughly enjoy Alexa Bliss.
Yeah. We've gotten to see, as you know, I know you've been watching NXT for a while now, is we've gotten to see this development from her early days, even before, you know, they teamed her with Blake and Murphy, and she was sort of the fifth horseman, like this phantom fifth woman who was always hanging around the other four, but never quite got, you know, never got quite pushed into that echelon. Maybe it's because it wasn't the five horsemen back in the day, but, you know, she was always up there, but you could always tell she was a little green. She was a little sloppy. She used to do that, like, double knee backflip, and it would be like a coin flip as to whether or not she would just absolutely crush her opponent, or she would make it look good and you know, do a good job working it. But, yeah, she's been phenomenal in the ring. I think, you know, now that you mentioned Bayley, I mean, Bayley is really, she's kind of a prisoner to whatever moment they allow her to have. Like, if you want to have a 20-minute match where you're going to tell a great story, like, for my money, Bayley's probably the best woman to have it. I mean, some of the matches we've seen with Asuka, with Nia, with Sasha, you know, she could tell a story for like an epic 4-star match, where I don't know that Alexa Bliss can do that yet, but she's doing way more with the time that she's given than anybody right now. Charlotte's given about 2 or 3 times the amount of time probably on a weekly basis on WWE TV. And, Alexa's making just as big an impact on the SmackDown side of things.
I would have to agree with that completely. All right, moving on from that, we keep getting off on tangents, but I'm having fun. I don't know about you, Bello.
I'm right there with you, man.
Next, though, we get a match made, and that is Bayley, Sasha, and Alicia Fox versus Dana Brooke, Charlotte, and Nia Jax. This match was 11 minutes and 45 seconds, which is pretty lengthy for a women's division match, considering this is really only women's division anything we got on the show. Bayley picks up the win, which I was surprised on a pinfall, belly to belly. I can't remember how that goes on Charlotte. Were you surprised that she pinned Charlotte clean at all here?
No. This is the sort of match that Charlotte loses, you know, fairly often, like these weird tag team matches or, you know, any sort of non-title, non-pay-per-view match. Apparently she's fair game to lose, but. I kind of figured that Bayley'd end up actually, you know, I kind of figured it would work out exactly as it did, that Bayley'd get the win. They're trying to build her up as the next contender, and, you know, they'll typically just keep giving her sort of wins in insignificant matches, and she'll probably lose against Charlotte when they ultimately collide for the title, at least the first time around. But, I liked it. I like that they're selling the Bayley to belly. My favorite finishing move name probably ever. I just think that's so unbelievably funny. just belly to belly. And I like that they sold it. You know, we've seen Charlotte go through war. She was just in a Hell in a Cell a couple weeks ago. One belly to belly, 1, 2, 3, and that match is over. So I do like that. I mean, they made Bayley look good. They made Nia look really strong. I don't know that I necessarily think she needs to be no-selling triple drop kicks, but they did their best. What did you think about that spot? That was sort of weird.
Yeah, that was weird. And, you know, they had a similar spot in the main event, too. And I get that they want to make her look like a monster. I think that they kind of overdo it sometimes. It's just like someone kind of overthinks it. They don't need to do quite that much, but you know, I like the fact that they made her look strong. I think that Nia, I don't know who they're getting her revved up for. I think it's going to probably be Sasha Banks. But, you know, they've done a pretty good job in making her look like a legit beast. I just think she needs a better finisher. Like, overall, my only problem with Nia Jax as a character is I want to see her with, and I've pushed this before. This is before you joined. I don't know if you heard this opinion of mine. But the jackknife powerbomb would be a perfect finisher for Nia Jax.
Yes. Yeah, no, I was a huge fan of when she was using that with the. I guess she started using it in NXT during the Asuka feud, yeah. Or at least started doing it more regularly. But yeah, no, give me Nia Jax just straight up power bombing chicks. That'd be dope. Like I'm down with watching that. Like it's the same deal with Braun Strowman. Like give me Braun Strowman throwing jobbers 20 feet in the air, and I'll be interested in what Braun Strowman's doing. Like if you're gonna have these monsters, they need to be doing something physically impressive and devastating. It's not enough to just have them go out there and beat people. They have to wreak havoc and, you know, and leave their mark on people. I'm all for the powerbomb thing. What is her finisher right now? I don't even know. She's used a couple different ones in recent history. What is her actual finisher?
I don't know. They moved on from the leg drop, thank God, because just at her size, that wasn't impactful at all. I really don't know what her finisher is, to be quite honest. She's used a few different slams and power moves like that, but I don't know if she really has just an established go-to finisher right now, which, I mean, Sasha Banks sell a Nia Jax powerbomb, I would live for that.
I would just be, like, I'd be holding my breath. Like, that would scare, the hell out of me, man. Like, don't be trying to kill my girl Sasha, man. Like, it's messed up. It's not even, I don't know, man. Like, yeah, she's either really good at what she does or she's actually as fragile as everyone makes her out to be. Either way, it's, you know, it's cringeworthy for me most of the time. But, you know, that's why we watch this stuff, right? To, like, evoke a reaction from ourselves. Like, you know, I was at NXT Brooklyn when she went off, when Bayley hit her with that reverse hurricanrana, like I was 20 feet from them and I just, you know, the world stopped. The whole thing was in slow motion. I'm just like, oh, please, one of you don't, like, neither of you die right now. Like, it was just one of those moments. So, I don't know if it's just, I don't know if it's because it's the women or because they're just smaller and slightly more fragile than the giant, big, bulky dudes. Like, I'm not trying to, you know, piss off anybody, but. You know, just sheer mass and biology says that's true. I don't know. It's something about the fact that it makes me actually concerned that they might get hurt. It brings a little bit of the reality aspect back to it for me. I don't know. Is it just me? Is it?
No, that's not just you. I mean, I love that as well. Yeah, I mean, I just hope that WWE gets just back to just certain things. I don't know what to say, man. It's a lot of little things that I miss with wrestling that we used to get more often, and now just like I said before, it just seems like whoever books stuff just kind of overthinks things sometimes.
Yeah. But yeah, next, they definitely do.
And next we get Sami Zayn versus Rusev. And what I'll say, I'm not going to break down this match all the way because I was thoroughly disappointed with this match. With these two guys, I thought we were going to get one hell of a show. And to me, this match was average at best. I like the fact of Rusev blocking the Helluva kick with the super kick of his own. I like the finish with Sami Zayn hitting a Helluva kick on Rusev when he was up on the top rope. But outside of really those two spots, this match was overall forgettable to me. I mean, I hate to say that. I kind of expected Sami to go over here. But how'd you feel about it? It just felt like, if I had to put it into words, it felt like that the ending had the whole slip on a banana peel ending to me. What about you?
Yeah, I think I definitely expected a much better match out of these two. I like Rusev, but I was thinking about this the other day, and I don't know that I can honestly name like a really good Rusev match. Like, I like his character. I like that he's like old-fashioned Eastern European curmudgeon who, you know, still thinks like women should be in the kitchen, like, you know, barefoot and pregnant and stuff like that. Like, I just like that whole domineering over the top kind of character that he does. I think it's an interesting spin on, instead of just being the nasty foreign heel, he's just like, he's the nasty foreign heel with opposing to, you know, normal views, and he's got this kind of weird spin on things. But yeah, like, he's never had a particularly great match. And if you're going to have a great match with anybody, it's going to be Sami Zayn. Like, the dude's already got two, if not three, match of the year contenders that he's been in this year with Nakamura and with Owens, and the four-way with Owens and Cesaro and The Miz. You know, he's been in some great matches. So if you're going to have a good match, it's going to be with Sami Zayn. And I don't know that this was necessarily Rusev's fault. Like, maybe this is just one of those, these guys don't have a whole lot of chemistry situations. But I did like the finish, like you said, with the Helluva kick. you know, not in your typical positioning. Where I was super impressed that Rusev didn't just fall off of the top rope. You know, how he took that kick and didn't go flying backwards was, you know, it was impressive. But other than that, the match was sort of disappointing. But I think they just kind of knew that they were killing some time until the main event, which was obviously the big deal for the night.
Yeah, I mean, and that's exactly what it felt like. Just killing time from the main event. Do you think that there's any way in hell Sami Zayn wins the IC title at Survivor Series?
No. But I'll say this. This match, for me, as somebody who's never been a huge fan of Dolph Ziggler, this is going to be the match for everybody out there who's ever bitched and moaned that Dolph Ziggler never got his chance. If Dolph Ziggler doesn't have a great match with Sami Zayn at this pay-per-view, like, that match should be amazing. And if it's anything short of amazing, and it's obviously not blatantly Sammy's fault that that's the case, that's exactly why Dolph Ziggler isn't your, you know, world heavyweight champion on a regular basis. That's why he wasn't Daniel Bryan before Daniel Bryan. That's why he doesn't get all the opportunities everyone thinks so, because that match should, on paper, it should be phenomenal. But I think, you know, Sammy's going to, you know, do his thing, and he's going to do his part to make that match great. And we'll see if Ziggler's every bit as amazing as everybody likes to pretend that he is.
Wow, Bella burying Dolph Ziggler. Damn, Bella. That was one hell of a promo, young man.
Well,
that
thank you. Sammy doesn't need a manager, but if he ever should, you know, go mute, I got it.
Well, I mean, I think I'm a little bit higher on Dolph than you are, but I do think these guys can put on one hell of a great match. I think if I had to pick it right now, I think this is a show-stealer opportunity here. I think this has the opportunity to maybe steal the show here. We'll see if that reigns true or not. But I absolutely love Sami Zayn. I hate to see what's just done with him, how he was just completely forgotten for a while after his big win over Kevin Owens. I don't get that. I don't get how you can give that guy that win and then just completely leave him off TV for the most part for like 2 or 3 weeks after that. But I thoroughly love Sami Zayn. I hope, I hope that they put on a 4-star, 4.5-star match here, and I just hope that it makes someone backstage take notice of, hey, the Sami kid, he has it. Let's do some more with him. But next, to end our show, let's go ahead and get to this main event, and that is Kevin Owens, Seth Rollins, Chris Jericho, Braun Strowman, and Roman Reigns. And what I can say about this match is that I thoroughly enjoyed this main event. I didn't like the ending as much. We'll get to that. But the match itself, I loved when Kevin Owens was doing the cannonballs. Did the cannonball to Roman Reigns outside the ring and went to do it to Seth, and Seth reversed it. I love the whole Seth and Roman teaming up, double teaming Braun Strowman. Braun just looked like a monster throughout this. At one point, all 5 men attacked him. I mean, the other 4 men attacked him, and he just overpowered them. I love the whole Seth Rollins powerbombing Jericho on top of Strowman, who was laying on top of a table. Like, in Braun Strowman's face after this, I thoroughly believe all the wind left Braun Strowman's breath for a while. I mean, breath left his body for a while there, because he just looked like, damn, that hurt. But how'd you feel about this match, Bella?
I like the match. It was entertaining. I mean, you know, it's 5 of their top guys, I guess, on Raw. I guess Strowman's in the top 5 now. I mean, story-wise, it makes sense. He hasn't lost in forever. But, like you said, they made him look like a monster here, which was the key. You know, you wanted him coming out of this match, at the very least, no worse for the wear as far as his character's been going. Jericho, you know, doing their kind of shenanigans of teaming up. Like you said, when Owens hit the cannonball, the outside the reins, he does the ooh-ah beforehand. Like, Kevin Owens could do no wrong in my book. He's just, every little detail of everything he's doing when he's in the ring is just perfect for his character. It's entertaining. It's everything that's right about pro wrestling. I like that a lot. Here's my hot take for the match, though, is that this is the kind of shit that makes me makes me hate the Roman Reigns character. Is he's standing there in the ring just staring at Braun Strowman like it's the first time he's ever seen him before, when we know he had like a lengthy feud with Braun Strowman when he first debuted. And they're sitting there, you know, he's kind of looking over Braun's shoulder like, you know, but they're beating up Rollins out there. I got to go help my buddy, even though, you know, they hated each other 2 weeks ago. And he won't just take a swing at Strowman. It takes him like 4 minutes before the two of them are doing anything more than just staring at one another. Like, I don't know. Like, to me, that doesn't help Strowman either. But at the same time, like, this is if Roman's character is this Samoan badass, you know, type, then what's he doing staring at this guy for? Like, take a swing at him. Let's make something happen here. I don't know. It just made it seem all the more goofy. And then the ending to this match doesn't help him any either, when he hits Owens with the Superman punch, who falls on top of Jericho, and Roman just magically forgot how to stop himself and just kept rolling out of the ring. Like, it just made him look like such a goof. And I don't, you know, these are the kind of things that don't help his case at all. Meanwhile, you got a guy like Braun Strowman, who's actually been built well, and as somebody who wasn't even interested in seeing him anywhere near the main event picture, now I'm starting to wonder, like, when does Braun get a shot at this? He's been killing people for a while, and they've managed to actually organically build him where we've seen the after effects of them trying to push Roman Reigns down our throats. So I don't know. This is all it's just at the point with me with Roman Reigns. Like, I don't know. He's getting closer and closer to being irredeemable on a weekly basis with me. I'm happy Mimi's not here to hear this. What do you
oh,
got?
Oh, God. I was just about to say, you're just crushing Mimi right now.
Sorry, Mimi.
So you buried Ziggler.
I did.
You're crushing Mimi. We both mutually buried Cole and Josh Matthews. This is. I think I found the subtitle for this podcast. This is the Buried Cast.
Yeah, this is.
But it's Braun Strowman. I will say this: when, you know, it was rumored around WrestleMania that Braun Strowman may have a match with Brock or whenever that was, and I was just like, no, keep him far away from Brock. This whole run, how he did very good in the match with these caliber of athletes. I honestly wouldn't mind seeing Braun Strowman versus Brock Lesnar. I wouldn't mind seeing Braun Strowman versus anybody at this point. This match, this is the turning point for me with the Braun Strowman character. And also his in-the-ring work. Squash matches really didn't do much for me as far as in the ring. The one where he had the three opponents, that did a little bit for me, because just seeing him just chase a guy outside the ring was just fucking hilarious to me.
Yeah.
But, you know, he did very good here. And I will say now, this mark, so what is this? This is November 7th, 2016. I am officially a Braun Strowman friend.
I'm in the eighth. I'm a whole day ahead of you right now.
Oh God, yeah. but yeah, so I'm a Braun Strowman fan officially. Like, I would love to, maybe not right into the main event, maybe have him feud with Roman for the US title for a while. Maybe have him feud with Chris Jericho. I don't know, but whatever it is, whatever's next for Braun after Survivor Series, I'm gonna be watching closely, because this match did it for me for him. Like, and I measure people against the talent they're in the ring with and what they can do, and if they just stick out like a sore thumb of not being ready. And he did not do that at all. He seemed like he fit in here for his character, for what he's able to do. He entertained me. And so for that, I'm officially a Braun Strowman fan.
Yeah. Yeah. It took me a little while to come around on him too. Like, I had very little interest in him, but I'll say this. I'm down with Team Chris, Kevin, and Braun. Like, if they wanted to make that a thing, that would have been really cool. Then, you know, to dive down the kayfabe rabbit hole there. You know, Owens looked like he was doing a good job of communicating with them, but Jericho just was, you know, being fickle and terrible as usual. So he kind of ruined that. But I thought that would have been a good, maybe that's even like a thing down the road they want to do, is that Kevin, you know, tries to recruit Braun Strowman to be his muscle so he doesn't have to do as much anymore. He had the whole idea there, you know, going into the locker room and trying to bring him on board. I thought that was great. I'd like to see them trying to do more, you know, kind of politicking backstage to try to bring, you know, curry some favor with some of the other guys, or bring people on board to do their bidding. I think, you know, but unfortunately, I think we're obviously going towards some sort of breakup with these two. But it would have been cool to see them, you know, add a member. Why not? Instead of breaking up, keep them together and add people on.
Yeah. Do you think they're breaking them up too early? Because we all know it's coming. It's coming. The whole next month leading up after Survivor Series, I think is going to be the descent. We'll probably see maybe even the final just straw between the two at Survivor Series. I'm not sure there. But do you think it's too early? WWE seems to have this thing where they like breaking things up too early. I guess it's better than doing it too late, I guess. But how do you feel about it?
Yeah, I think if these two were faces, like if they're intended goal was to be faces, I don't think they'd be breaking them up quite so soon, but because they're heels, I think this is maybe one of these situations where Vince is pissed something got over without his permission, and maybe he just wants to get them broken up so that he can say that it failed, or just to move on to something else with the two of them. But I don't really know what happens with the breakup here. Like, they're both lovable heels. Owens is, they're both like, who does the crowd side with? Like, who ends up the baby face here? What do you think about that?
I mean, as much as I would hate to say it, it almost has to be Jericho, right? I mean, it just doesn't make sense to turn KO face and he's the champion. You kind of want to keep him as the heel champion, at least in my opinion. So I think Jericho's going to end up being, the list of Jericho is the most over, it's more over than the Universal title. That's for sure.
Oh yeah.
So I think he has to be the one to turn face. What about you?
Yeah, I tend to agree. I think that the people are really, especially if they're going to do something at Survivor Series to split them up. I don't know that the crowd isn't going to cheer for both of them no matter what they do. Like, this might just be like one of these weird scenarios where it's beyond anything that WWE can try to write to get a reaction out of. The crowd just might cheer both of them the whole time, and this could turn into like a great rivalry potentially because of it. But I fear that Jericho's probably going away at some point in the near future. I don't know that he's hanging on all the way through WrestleMania, so maybe that's how you build some more heat is that you have Owens put Jericho out and he can go do his Fozzy tour and then come back at his leisure.
Yeah, true. And then you also have to, like, Chris Jericho's technically part-time, but he's been here since, before the Rumble last year? Because he was in the Rumble. So he's been here for almost a whole year at this point. This is one of his longer run since he's been a part-timer. So yeah, I mean, maybe they have the whole angle, they have the brief feud between him and KO. KO injures him and technically puts him out for a while. I don't know, but yeah, Jericho's going to be going away for in the near future, and I will say I'm going to miss him greatly.
Oh, me too.
The Raw roster is going to miss him greatly. It's going to be a weird time. Weird times at all having Jericho not on our TVs every week, because he's thoroughly been one of the most enjoyable parts of Raw week to week.
Yeah, it'll be interesting to see what he has in store for us when he comes back, though. You know, with Jericho, that's the beauty of the gift of Jericho. Drink it in, man. You never know what he might come back with when he does ultimately return. So, there's always that to look forward to, at least trying to glass half full that thing.
Yeah, for sure, for sure. All right, so we've gone an hour and a half. Thank you for everyone who stuck with us. But before we end, you know how we like ending the show? Bello, your rating for Raw this week, 1 through 10.
1 through 10. I liked it. With some of the booking decisions, I'm going to knock it down a peg. So I'm going to go with the solid 7.5 for this one. It was entertaining for most of the night. I wasn't, my meter is always how much I'm looking at my phone during Raw when I'm watching it. So I didn't pick it up quite as often as I maybe would on a normal night. So 7.5, and I'll give Chris Jericho an MVP award for the night because he's just awesome and everything he does is amazing.
I am not quite as high as my rating, which I'm surprised, as I felt like I may have been higher on the show overall than you, but I'm giving it a 6.5, which anyone who's heard the Red Zone knows that's probably my highest rating for Raw in like the last month. I'll give it a 6.5, almost a 7. That ending, like I said, I just did not like that ending that much of the main event. And I'm one of those people to where if the very last thing I see kind of I'm down on, it affects my overall rating of the show. So maybe going back and viewing it, I rate a little bit higher. But right now, after the initial viewing, I'm giving it a 6.5. So that's my rating for this week.
All right.
All right. So before we tell the people good night, Andrew, tell the people where they can find you, and also plug your podcast a little bit. It's the best podcast on the WWP, and that I'm not on. No, I'm just playing.
No, you can take that. That works.
Nah. Go ahead.
I'm the Andrew Bello. I am the host of the Next Level Wrestling podcast here on the Wrestling World Podcast Network. You can find my information as well as all the information for all of the hosts here on the network on our new website, which is thewwpn.com. That's thewwpn.com. Sorry, I stole that plug if you were going to do it, Hayes. So the new website's up. You can find all the contact information for everybody there, all the podcasts. We're going to have articles up soon. My Twitter account is wwpnbello. That's at wwpn, B as in boy, ELLO. Get me up to some Twitter followers. I got a running contest going on my show that basically, you know, if we get me to 200 followers on Twitter, I have a large Dean Ambrose hoodie that I'm willing to hand out to a lucky listener. So, we got the holidays coming up. It's a $49.99 retail value on WWE Shop. So it is a large. It's a Dean Ambrose Dirty Deeds hoodie. So, like I said, they get me to 200 followers on Twitter. And before I throw it back to you, Hayes, for the farewell, everybody go out and vote tomorrow. If you're in the United States, I'm not going to try and get too political with it, but go out and vote, even if you're in one of those states that's predetermined. Those states ended up that way because of that line of thinking. Go out and vote. Make your voice heard. Vote for Mickey Mouse for all I care. Vote for Waka Flocka and Ric Flair. That's the hot ticket this year. So make a mockery of the system. Maybe we can actually invoke some change in it someday. But go ahead and, make sure you get out there and do that if you're of age and you're, a citizen of the U.S. That's me on my soapbox for this week. Hayes, pleasure as always, man. Throwing it to you.
Well, you literally stole all my shit. Everything I was going to plug, man. You stole. But no, it's great. Yeah, everybody, seriously, go out and vote. Show out in big numbers. This is the, let me not say the one time, but this is one of the times where your voice is definitely going to get heard and you can affect change. Don't buy into the mindset of, oh, it's only one vote, it doesn't count. No, that's not true. Like Andrew said, having that kind of mindset is kind of why certain states got that way and just why certain things are just assumed to be a certain way anyway. So go out, show out in big numbers, vote, no matter who you're voting for. I'm not going to get into my political opinions, but definitely go out and vote. I'm actually waking up myself to go vote at 6 o'clock in the morning, so I'll be there bright and early. Other than that, as Andrew said, go to our website. Also, it's a podcast, so unfortunately you guys can't see it, but the WWPN is about to have merch, people. We're about to have our first t-shirt, which I thoroughly like this t-shirt. Andrew, what do you think about the t-shirt?
It looks pretty good. I'm stoked. I already got a few potential buyers. We got to get some kid sizes for our daughters.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, that's for sure. That's going to be the little the marketer right there, the model. I'm going to have to just put her in the shirt and then put it on the website. But, we'll definitely have a shirt here very soon, so look out for that. Vacated Title Tees, which the owner of Vacated Title will be joining us for our Survivor Series recap. So look out for that. That's going to be exciting. But other than that, you can follow the Wrestling World Podcast Network at Wrestle World without the O cast on Twitter. Like I said, go to the WWPN where you can see all our lovely hosts. We will have articles up soon. I'm actually putting the final touches on my first article that I've written, and that is what really is a smark. So just be on the lookout for that. I've really put some effort in that one. Hopefully everyone loves it. But as I like to end every show, I like to end every show by telling all our listeners and supporters, thank you. We've been around almost 6 months now, people, and we've grown very exponentially since then. And I just want to thank you for everyone who's followed us through this journey. We've had some very rough times. We started off with our RDO very rough. I'm sure you guys have heard an improvement there. Thank you for everyone who's decided to join on to the Wrestling World Podcast Network. We have just a lovely group of people. We all get along great, and I would like to say we're all legitimately, friends to a certain extent. We don't, unfortunately, we're just all over the United States, so we didn't get to hang out and kick it. But we definitely have a very good group and a very knowledgeable group on wrestling here, and we all have our own very solid opinions. Also, I will be going to WrestleMania this year, people. That's certain. Cool. It's in the books. Me and JB will be kicking it up at WrestleMania, so be on the lookout for live streams and everything else there. We're going to just be doing some crazy stuff there. I'm probably going to have an alcoholic beverage in hand at all times, so that's going to be interesting, but Thank you. Seriously, all jokes aside, thank you for following us. If that leaves nothing else, I'm going to say good night, Andrew. Tell the people good night.
Have a good night, people.